You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, the Stanley Cup Final starts tomorrow. And you'll get a preview from a guy who used to play for and won a cup with one of the teams. Can you just settle your brain down a bit and stop overthinking everything, please? An expert will help you with that. The next president will likely have the most likes and retweets. Let's meet the friends. Aaron Myers has the day off. And here to bicycle kick a story right through your speakers is our producer, Brooke Peterson.
Mr. FIFA president is singing a very different tune just 4 days after his reelection. What is he saying now?
Here to prove that this show can be used for just about anything, it's Chris Martin.
What is the number one thing you don't want to see someone doing with your plane just before takeoff?
Ooh. Hey, if you listen to this program on iTunes, thank you for that. And thanks for leaving a comment and a review, especially a good one. You're helping the program when you do that because the folks over at iTunes, they read your comments and can be convinced that this show is otherwise the most wonderful thing since sliced bread. Oh, thanks for the 5-star reviews, right? Okay, let's get started. Brooke, you're here and you have your favorite hat on.
I do. I love my hat.
You've been wearing that hat since childbirth?
Practically.
Yeah.
I don't even know where it came from. It's just been always there.
Yes.
Within an arm's reach.
But since childbirth, that implies that you've given birth to a baby. What I meant was to say was that since you were born.
Since I was born. Yeah, I got that.
Since you rolled out of the womb, you had that hat on.
Oh, yeah. I didn't grow much. I was a big baby.
Were you? Whoa. Ouch.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, exactly. And you're here today, and I don't typically expect you to go straight for the sports stories, but I guess soccer is your
Shaking
wheelhouse.
Things up, man.
Yeah. And what's happening with the president of FIFA? What's his name?
Sepp Blatter.
Can you have a more unusual name?
Yeah. What's his nationality? Do you know?
It's not his real name. His real name's Joseph.
Is it?
Yeah.
Joseph
and Sepp
S.
is a nickname?
Blatter?
Yeah. It's sort of a middle name that's turned into a nickname.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Check you out the little
Everybody
trivia.
Calls him Sepp.
But yeah. It's not that. Sepp Blatter is not one of those things you hide under your poncho at Lollapalooza and you fill it full of whiskey?
That's a camelback.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Which
right.
is almost like a bladder.
Yes.
A camel bladder.
Yeah.
I see the connection.
All right. So what's the deal with the bladder boy?
He was just reelected after all that controversy last week.
Okay.
He still was able to get reelected for his fifth term as FIFA president. And then 4 days later, he's like, I'm going to resign.
Uh-oh. That's a red flag right there because somehow, some way, he has escaped the ultimate scrutiny with all of this. All of the shenanigans going on at FIFA.
Absolutely.
And it's got to trickle up to the top, wouldn't you think?
Well, I would think, especially if there's the millions and millions of dollars they're talking about exchanging hands and for certain World Cup favors.
Yeah.
I also think it's kind of interesting that over a period of a weekend, maybe some people had a couple of telephone conversations with the man.
Yeah.
And maybe got a little nervous. Who knows? But he's going to continue his duties. And throughout the year, they're going to have re-elections sometime between December and March next year. And then he will step down. He's 79 years old. I'm surprised he would have wanted to do it again anyway.
Sure. Yeah, really. And now it brings more light to how in the world Rio de Janeiro won the World Cup over, what was it, Detroit?
Rio de Janeiro? Are you talking about Qatar?
No. Isn't the World Cup going to be in Rio?
No, they already had that. They had that in Brazil this past
That's
World
right.
Cup.
That was the past. It already happened.
It already happened, Phil.
And Brazil was able to build a soccer stadium in time for that to happen.
Yeah, it worked out somehow. And, of course, there was all that controversy then about Brazil putting all their money into this World Cup instead of their, feeding their
Chris,
people.
Did we just absolutely ignore the World Cup when it happened in Rio?
No, we covered it extensively.
Where was I? Did I leave the room?
You were here in the
you
studio.
In Qatar.
Physically, you were here. You know, it was one of those things where the lights were on, but nobody was home, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
No, the next one is in Russia. And which I also think is pretty interesting. Vladimir Putin last week was all like vocal and really upset about the Americans sort of butting their nose into this business.
Uh-huh.
And Russia is the next one up. And it's like, Vlad, something to hide, Mr. Putin?
He's got a green hand to hide in
Maybe.
His pocket. Sure.
He's like, no.
All right. But you know what? Just the same, the United States isn't going to win a World Cup anytime soon. Unless, of course, it's the...
Dun-da-da-da!
The women.
The girls!
Yeah, the girls. These are some girls, hey, Chris?
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Are they?
It's quite a team that they've assembled here.
Have they put together a poster or a calendar yet?
I've only seen the pictures online, but if there is a calendar issued, I'll be first in line to buy it.
Will you? Okay.
Yeah, they look good.
All right.
They're awesome athletes.
But they're good players.
They're fantastic.
And they stand a chance to win.
And I actually they are the favorites this year. And apparently pretty much every World Cup, the American women are favorites, but this would be... If they win this year, it'd be the first time in 16 years. So they've had a bit of a drought, but it'd be their third win. They have won twice before. Mm-hmm. It'd be their third win, and maybe it's about time. Yeah. Apparently, you know.
Has it been 16 years since Sandy Chastain, what's her name? She did that.
It cannot have been 16 years.
That
please
epic
tell
thing
me
where
it has not been 16 years.
She was
years.
Sliding on her knees and taking off her top,
no,
and she had her sports bra.
Years? Yeah.
Don't even know what you're talking about.
Of course you don't.
Yes,
sounds
you
awesome,
do.
Though. No,
yeah. That's what I was talking about earlier, about ripping off a T-shirt.
Yes. She was doing basically what the guys do, except the guys aren't wearing sports bras.
At least she had a sports bra on.
Sure.
Could have been a bigger problem.
Yes, it could have been.
Or grabbed more ratings.
Sure.
She got some pretty good ratings.
Yeah.
Out of that.
Okay.
But yeah, so the female, I feel like women's soccer, and I could get in so much trouble for saying this.
Go ahead. You won't get in trouble, I promise.
I kind of feel like it's one of the only sports that to watch it is just as exciting as the guys.
I'll buy that. You know, let's discount lingerie football because that doesn't count at all. But it is probably more fun to watch than regular football. Would you agree with that? Okay, fine. We're all on the same page. But when it comes to real sport, you know, women's basketball, I get bored.
I'm not a basketball fan anyway. So
I enjoy the fast pitch women's softball.
But am I going to watch it on a Sunday afternoon with a beer?
Probably not. After I say, holy cow, how can she pitch a ball that size so fast with that underarm thing? And how does she not knock her hip out of joint every time she lets that thing go?
Or her shoulder dislocate her
shoulder. And after about the fifth or sixth pitch, I'm over that. And then what's left is the baseball, and it's not as good as
Women on the soccer field is fantastic.
I agree with you. Yeah, you're not going to get in trouble with that. Okay, fine, tennis.
Tennis, I love women's tennis.
All right.
Well, you guys are forgetting the major women's sport that is the most attractive women's sport, and that's volleyball, right?
Oh.
I mean, come on now.
Okay, yeah.
Whether it's beach volleyball, you can do indoor court volleyball.
All right, so now we're blowing holes in your theory here. Yeah. The women's beach volleyball, okay.
I did
way
watch
more
that
fun
for the
to
Olympics.
Watch
but
than
only
guys.
It's like the Olympics, and that's, you know, every 4 years, and so it's not like a seasonal thing.
What about golf?
Yeah.
No.
Well,
no.
If you're talking about popularity,
probably
women's
not.
Golf is fun to watch.
Yeah.
Really?
But,
fun?
Yeah, but
for, well, when you're a golf fan.
But women's beach volleyball probably gets better ratings than women's golf.
Well, they were pretty, you know, smoking. And I don't just mean like the way they look. They were like awesome athletes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they were smoking too.
Were they?
Sure.
Did they do that before a game? All right, Chris, off to you now. Let's find, before we get Brooke into any more trouble for disparaging women and throwing in marijuana jokes when unnecessary. Now this, when you billboarded this at the top of the show, we're getting on an airline, and this is what we don't want to see. And all sorts of things were running through my head. You know, there's the people, the what are they called? Where they come up and down the aisle and they help you out with your seatbelt and your pillow.
You must
stewardess?
Be talking about the
flight attendants.
The attendants.
The flight attendants. Yes. They're back there, and they're inviting all the kids on the plane to help them toss the salad. I wouldn't want to see that.
I don't know what you're talking about. What plane has salad tossing on it with a bunch of children being invited
saying,
to the back of the plane?
Things
are
that
you
I
using
would,
a double entendre?
Things
what
that I would never want
here?
To see on a plane.
Right.
What else would I never want to see? I suppose a guy with a gaping wound on his neck coming down the aisle, and I have an open seat next to me, and he sits right down next to me.
Okay, what else? Let's keep going.
I don't know. A used air sickness bag in the seat in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's something I wouldn't want to see.
How about somebody on the outside of the engine using duct tape to repair it?
I wouldn't want to see that.
Wow. No, you wouldn't?
Although duct tape is amazingly strong and can be used in speeds of up to 1,000 miles per hour.
Some would say duct tape holds the world together. One passenger of an EasyJet flight became a viral sensation over the weekend. He looked out the window and saw a maintenance guy putting duct tape on the engine.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Twitter was the buzz. It actually turned out to be speed tape, which is not duct tape. That'll go
10,000 miles.
Speed tape will go 10,000 miles, as a matter of fact. Yep. It literally holds planes together. EasyJet responded with, "This was mostly a cosmetic fix. Without the tape, air can get between the engine and the fairing, causing vibration.
Yeah.
Under rare circumstances, the fairing can be torn off by air pressure."
Yeah. Oh, now, by the way, don't worry about it. Everything's cool, man. We're EasyJet. That's their slogan. All right. Thanks, Chris. By the way, in case you didn't know, the Stanley Cup final begins tomorrow, and we're about to get a preview from a former Chicago Blackhawk. That's next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Tomorrow, the National Hockey League's 2015 Stanley Cup Final begins, a best-of-seven series between the Western Conference champion Chicago Blackhawks and the Eastern Conference champs, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Joining us to preview the matchup is former Blackhawk player, Stanley Cup winner himself, now hockey analyst at 120 Sports, Brent Sopel. Hey, Soaps, how's it going, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Excellent. It's a great time of year, unless you're a Rangers or a Ducks fan. And
unfortunately, I'm sorry for your Ducks.
Well, thank you very much. Wait, they just didn't want it as much as the Blackhawks did, and that's what it comes down to. And so it's something that they've got to deal with in future seasons, and I'm sure they will somehow, some way. But we move on, and we, as hockey fans, we're excited for the matchup here. And let me ask you about it. I know you've got your, you probably have your favorites, and we're just going to assume that it's going to be tough for you to not pick sides. But let's start here. Chicago's Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, they already have two cups together. Will they skate away with a third against a formidable Eastern Conference team? What do you think?
You know, I'm going to have to say yes. The experience that the Blackhawks have, obviously, you know, two Stanley Cups already, 2010, 2013. There's five guys on the Blackhawks right now, it's six if you count the backup goalie, that haven't won a Stanley Cup. You go on the other side of Tampa Bay, you have one guy that has won a Stanley Cup. So experience is always important, but it's so important at this time of year. You're playing for the biggest trophy, the hardest trophy in the world to win. And as kids, we've always dreamt of it. So emotions run high. And this is really where, you know, experience comes into play.
So experience trumps skill, and is, I think, what you're saying. But let's put a microscope on Tampa Bay for a moment. There's the captain, Steven Stamkos, talking about skill there, of course, and the so-called triplets line of Tyler Johnson, Andrei Palat, and Nikita Kucherov. And there's the Lightning's 12-foot-tall goalie, Ben Bishop, of course. Solve those guys, and it's over, right?
You know what? This is going to be a completely different series than, obviously, you know, what you saw Chicago and Anaheim, and then on the other side, Tampa and Rangers. This is going to be a lot of skill versus skill. Like you talk about that triplet line, while they're going to match up, let's say, you know, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Brandon Saad. You know, their second line, they've got Steven Stamkos. You know, he's not even a guy that fits on their top line. But this is the series is going to be won, to me, is the third and fourth lines. I'm right now, you talk about the third line is Chicago Blackhawks. You have Patrick Sharp, who scored 40 goals.
Yep.
Anton Vermette, who's a 60-point guy. And Teuvo Teravainen. You know, Teuvo Teravainen's going to be, he's a young kid, young Finnish kid, first-round pick he's going to be, you know, unbelievable skills.
Yeah.
Well, you go to cap base, you've got Ryan Boyle. You know, he's a great player at what he does, but skill-wise, he doesn't match up with Anton Vermette. He's a penalty killer. You got Ryan Callahan, great, hard-nosed, gritty guy. He's a guy that you love on your team, blocking shots, in the corners, doing whatever he can. Well, he doesn't match the skill, and the skill is what this series is all about. Their third and fourth line is good, but it's not as skilled as the Chicago Blackhawks. Chicago Blackhawks on their fourth line. Now, they have Andrew Shaw, who scored 2 goals in Game 5. He's on their fourth line.
Yeah.
And this is where the series is really going to be won, you know, those bottom two lines.
Yeah. The best is in the West this year, for sure. Let me ask you about this, because as a player and as a defenseman, you've spent your fair amount of time standing in the crease on a power play, trying to give the goalie a hard time. But goalies are getting bigger and bigger, it seems. How do you get a puck into the net when it's guarded by a man mountain?
You know what? It's insane. I don't know what they're feeding these kids, because I'm trying to feed my kids the same thing, and they're not growing to that size. You know, it's amazing how big these guys are now. You know, it's not long since I just retired, you know, not long ago, a few months ago, and how big these guys are and how athletic. That's the biggest thing. You know, there used to be big guys, but they weren't athletic. Ben Bishop is unbelievably athletic. He can come out and he plays the puck. He plays the puck better than some players do. He gets out there, he hangs on to it, he makes perfect passes. It makes a defenseman's life so much easier. And it's, you know what, for the game of hockey and a fan and a, you know, a fellow player, it is awesome to watch. But if you don't get in front of him and create traffic and not let him see the puck, he will stop that thing all day long.
Yep. Yeah, and that's Tampa Bay's only hope, is that Ben Bishop stops 40 pucks per game. Now, before we let you go, Brent Sopel, and you're doing a great job, and we love the work you're doing as analyst now at 120 Sports. The league's rookie of the year, the Calder Memorial Trophy, could go to an 18-year-old defenseman, Aaron Ekblad. You're a defenseman. Did Ekblad turn in the kind of season that deserves a trophy, or will he lose points when compared to the other two guys, a couple of forwards who both went to the playoffs, Mark Stone of Ottawa and Johnny Hockey, Johnny Gaudreau of Calgary?
You know what? Obviously, you know, Mark Stone had a great year. Johnny Hockey, obviously, everybody knows what kind of year, phenomenal. And like you said, both guys went to the playoffs. But, you know, this is a regular season trophy. So it's what you did from game one to game 82. And what Aaron Ekblad did is just phenomenal. They say as a defenseman, you don't hit your prime until your late 20s, early 30s. Why is that? It's the same thing as goaltending. Because there's so much more to the game, and so much more it's between your head. The thinking side of things, you got to read situations, you got to read plays. A lot of forwards, you don't have to do that. You kind of go up and down the wing. You have to worry about one guy. So what he did, absolutely, he deserves this trophy, the Calder Trophy. He played in a great team. Florida was right there up until the last two games of the year. They're fighting for a playoff spot. And a lot of it was because of him. He was on that top pair with Brian Campbell, and the two of them were outstanding all year. So for an 18-year-old kid to leave home, leave junior hockey, go to, you know, Florida, obviously not the hockey hotbed, but it's not an easy place to play when you guys in California, you know, the sunshine's always, well, you know, here in Chicago, or you're in Columbus, or you're in Winnipeg, it's freezing cold. It's, you're used to going to the rink. So for him to juggle both sides, phenomenal year. Congrats to him, and he should absolutely win this trophy.
All right, we'll see if you're right about that. Brent Sopel, thank you very much for spending some time with us, and enjoy the Stanley Cup Final.
Anytime. Thank you, sir.
All right, and watch him on 120 Sports. Get the app. Watch him on online and all of that. It's a lot of fun, and I know I'll be watching, even though I am still in a world of hurt with my Ducks not winning the Western Conference Final. And you know what? The Blackhawks just wanted it more. Got to be honest about it. The Ducks somehow caved.
Was it a good game, though?
Not really.
There were a handful of good games. There was a great series up until, I'd say, game 6, when things turned decidedly in favor of Chicago. And the Ducks lost a couple of overtime games that I think, had they won just one of those, then perhaps it would have gone 5, maybe 6, and the Ducks would have taken it. But somehow it got in their head. And okay, fine, I'll say it. They choked. And they've got a 2-year record of choking in the postseason. They did that last season as well. So they've got to deal with that in the offseason and figure out a way to just come out and bring it every game and believe that they could win it. I don't have any problems with the Chicago Blackhawks, and it doesn't seem like the Ducks do either. There doesn't seem to be any kind of animosity between the two teams. The Blackhawks won it fair and square. Strange referee calls along the way, notwithstanding. But just the same, they're going off, and they're representing the Western Conference, where we need to keep the cup. And okay, fine. If they win another one, it'll be 3 Stanley Cups in 6 years. And,
wow.
And as a hockey fan, that's a big deal.
They're like the Patriots.
Yeah, something like that. Mm. Only the Patriots, a guy stubs his toe, he's out for the season. That's the difference. A hockey player loses a leg, he's out back on the ice the next shift.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They are amazing athletes. It's incredible.
Yeah. You know what? And the hangnails will keep out the basketball players, too. The Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors, isn't that right? They're in the NBA Finals, where it's plural. It's one series, but it's plural. In hockey, it's the final. It's one series. It's singular. But that starts on Thursday. And did you know that the top players on both teams, the Cavaliers and the Warriors, were born in the same hospital? Relatively close together, too, in terms of the calendar. LeBron James from Cleveland and Steph Curry from Golden State were both born at Akron General Medical Center in Akron, Ohio, 38 months and 14 days apart.
In Akron, of all places.
Yes, Rubber City.
It's not like it's L.A.
Must be something in the water in that hospital, huh?
There
yeah.
you go.
Huh? Yeah. Producing MVPs on the reg. Look
now,
at that.
Now you're talking. Hey, think about this question for a moment. Are you addicted to overthinking? Okay, stop thinking. No, really. Stop thinking. You're overthinking this.
I can't stop.
Cut it out. Stop
no.
it. There's help for you. And for me. And for Brooke, by the way.
Thank you.
Next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, you're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends, added.com. You're at our website. Remember the KISS method? You remember what that is?
Keep it simple, stupid?
Exactly.
Silly.
Keep Whatever.
It simple, silly.
Silly.
That's not as impactful.
No, it's not.
Okay. The mamby-pamby generation.
Whatever happened to that, anyway? These days, in our supercharged, high-tech, instant gratification society, a majority of us overthink things. Work, relationships, you name it. Too much thinking going on. Joining us live is with some perspective on this is the author and nationally known psychologist. His latest book is Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces. It's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Dr. Paul Coleman, welcome.
Hey, Phil. Thank you for having me.
It's so great that you're here. Life, doctor, should be so much easier with all the gadgets that we're surrounded by, right?
Well, it should be, shouldn't it?
Yes.
But it isn't. All those gadgets give us too much information, and for a lot of people, too much information leads to too much overthinking and not always being able to make the right decisions.
All right, so define for us overthinking, because maybe we do it so often we don't even realize we're doing
it. Right. Well, there's a few different types, but broadly speaking, it's when you can't stop your mind chatter about the past or the future, what to do, what happened in the past, long enough to make a rational decision. So there's many different types. The main type is usually worrying about the future and thinking ahead, what if this happens, what if that happens. A second type is regretting the past. And then you have your perfectionists and you have people with obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah.
Those last two cases are special cases.
Sure. You know, it almost seems like if we rolled this back a couple hundred years, and we were just out on the prairie with a shack and a rifle and an axe. You had to make split second decisions because very often they were life and death decisions, and you wouldn't think very long about them. And you either made the right decision or the wrong. And the people who see you make the wrong decision learn from that, and they would make the right decision the next time. And that was all there was to it, right?
Life in some ways was simpler back then. If we lived on an island and had coconuts and fish every day, we wouldn't be overthinkers. But today, in today's society, everything is planned. We're all very busy. We have work lives. We have family lives. And we think by planning ahead, we're doing the right thing. And we are, unless we're overthinking it, in which case we are adding so much more stress to our lives and we're actually increasing the odds we're not going to make the best decisions.
Is there pressure in society, generally speaking, to be a perfectionist?
Well, I think in certain cases, yes, to keep your job. You know, if you have a highly competitive job, if you're a very busy mom or dad and you have to run home and make dinner and get the kids to bed and do all those things, there's a tendency to want to make sure you have everything all laid out and that there's no mistakes. And that usually gets in our way.
Yeah. And again, we take you back to the shack on the prairie. There were some very simple needs there. Stay alive, eat, stay warm, that sort of thing. Shelter, food. But today, there's probably pressure in relationships because people want stuff. And if you're the provider in the relationship, I would think there's a lot of overthinking going on because you think, well, the family needs all this stuff. And if I can't provide all this stuff, somehow I'm not thinking straight about this, so I'll just keep thinking about it until I make it happen.
There is some evidence that overthinking increased after the 2008 economic collapse that we had. It definitely increased after 9/11. So when money is tight, we always have to then overthink to make sure we're making the right decisions. But when you're overthinking, you start elevating small things to big things. And things that aren't likely to happen, you start thinking are probably likely to happen. And you start jumbling up all these confusing variables, and it makes it hard to know what's the best thing to do.
Yeah, we lose our ability to prioritize things and stick a bunch of things in the drawer and go back to that drawer 5 or 6 days from now and see if they're important, and generally they are not. That's what I've learned in life. But are we doing anything bad to ourselves psychologically, physically, when we're overthinking and living life this way?
Well, you are definitely adding to your stress. You're adding to the likelihood that the decisions you make are going to be more reckless or not the best decisions. Those are the first main things. Other things, if something does happen to you that's stressful, you know, there's a major emergency or crisis in your life, and you are an overthinker, those people suffer more stress than non-overthinkers going through the same crisis.
Hmm. Is this more prevalent with millennials, or are we yuppies falling prey to this as well?
It seems to be that the older we get, the less we overthink. The largest majority of overthinkers are in the 25 to 35 age range, about 70% by some estimates, according to the University of Michigan.
Hmm.
45 to 55, you have like a maybe 50% of those folks tend to overthink. And if you're over 65, there's maybe a 20% chance.
Sounds like the new benchmark for wisdom, right?
Yes. You do have more wisdom when you're not overthinking because you see the meaning of things more clearly and you're not confusing unimportant variables with important variables.
So what is your advice then to help us manage our overactive minds?
Well, there's a few things you can do. First, you have to understand that if you know you're an overthinker, it's not helping you. People think it's like insurance, that if they have a lot of it, it's going to help them, and they're afraid to not overthink for fear that they're going to miss something. But that's not the case. You have to be able to accept uncertainty. Overthinkers want to reduce uncertainty to zero, and they can't. So the more you can say, I may not like my situation or my future situation, but I accept the uncertainty. Believe it or not, that simple statement taps into part of your brain that allows you to go with the flow. So
okay.
That's one thing you can do.
Yep. All right. And I know there are a whole bunch of other things that we can do. We'll read your book, Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces. Our co-host here and our producer, Brooke Peterson, is here. And I see her head exploding. She's overthinking during the entire conversation here. I need to ask Dr. Paul Coleman a question. Which question is it going to be? But somehow, I don't know. She's very analytical. She's very detailed. And she really does overachieve when it comes to producing the show. But I could see a question just like steam coming out of your ears.
It's true. It's true. Can I? May I, please?
Yes, of course you can.
Well, I would like to know, how can a person tell when what they are doing is actually overthinking something instead of just, you know, doing their research and their proper due diligence on something to make a good rational decision?
Well, when you feel like you're spinning your wheels or you're up all night, or you've checked and double-checked, and you think you've gotten all the information you can reasonably get, but you're still going after it, you're overthinking.
Analysis paralysis.
Yes, very much so.
Oh, too bad. The book's already published. You can't use that one.
It's tough. It's hard. I overthink a
lot.
It is
right.
Hard.
I think
it's hard, but not impossible.
I think we all do. So what we need to do is chill out, make a decision, and go with it. And own it.
Yes. Yes. And I do have a free download on how people can help stop overthinking. If they go to my website, they can just order a free download.
And the website is?
Peacefulbook.com.
Peacefulbook.com. We'll add that to our links page so that people can find it forever. Thank you very much, sir. We hope to have you on the show again, and good luck with the book.
Thank you very much, Phil. I enjoyed it. Have a great day.
Me too. You too. Thanks. All right. He was pretty good, you think?
You'd have to imagine success with a website like peacefulbook.com.
Yeah. Why?
Because isn't that, I mean, that's just.
How long did he have to think before he came up with that URL?
Probably not very long, but how happy are you when you find out that it's not taken?
Oh,
right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, peacefulbook.com. That's got to be one of the first ones people grab. It's like website.com or something. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Or like welcome to my website.com.
And it's got to jump right to the top of the search engine when you're looking for books on peace or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Peaceful book.
Oh, I'll just chill out. I'm just going to chill out, Phil.
Pretty sure the domain name, this is the only website you'll ever have to visit from this pointforward.com is still available.
Most likely. It's a little long-winded, Phil.
It is.
Breathy.
But see, you could bookmark it once you find it and you type it properly.
Yeah.
All right, so we have presidential elections coming up sometime in the future. You could tell because there are all sorts of people posturing and throwing their hat in the ring and all of that. And it's a bunch of guys on the right and a lady and one guy on the left. And we're going to talk about that next, believe it or not. We don't typically do politics. This is not a political conversation. Our next president will likely have to be a master at social media. That's what we're going to talk about next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thank you for tuning in. I want to make it very, very clear right now that I am not a candidate for president. But I am the host of this program, Phil Hewlett and Friends, and today the friends are Chris Martin and our producer, Brooke Peterson. Aaron Myers will be back on Thursday. And the 2016 presidential election will very likely come down to which candidate rules social media. Our next guest, I believe, agrees with that statement, and she joins us now. Kaylin Amadio is a marketing consultant, trainer, coach, author of the upcoming book, The Boomer's Ultimate Guide to Social Media Marketing. Hello, Kaylin.
Hi, how are you and your friends?
Well, we're all well, and in fact, better now that you've joined us. Now, here's the thing I don't understand, Kaylin. Generally speaking, young people don't vote, and generally speaking, social media is populated by young people, is it not?
Well, I have to tell you, it is not the fastest growing demographic amongst almost all of the tried and true social media platforms is the over 50 crowd.
No kidding. What? So the baby boomers then, when did they start?
Yes.
When did they start embracing social media?
Well, you know, they followed their children and their grandchildren into it so that they could actually speak to them again. It's been happening for a few years now.
Yeah, right. Grandma, quit using emojis, please.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about the candidates a little bit here. On the Democratic side, we have two candidates that I know of so far, Hillary Clinton and some guy who will drop out shortly after the New Hampshire primary, and a ton of guys on the Republican side. Who's doing the best social media job out there so far?
Well, there certainly is a very full field. And I'll tell you, I've had to, there are so many of them, I've had to institute a report card. I call it a social media report card so that I can actually apply some sort of means and method to the whole thing. And as of the end of the month of May, the candidates that are doing the best job, and I grade them with a B+, are Bernie Sanders and Dr. Ben Carson.
Both Republicans. Right?
No, Bernie Sanders is a Democrat.
Oh, he's the Democrat. Okay.
Yeah. The latest Democrat that declared, I think it was on Saturday, was Martin O'Malley.
All right. He's the one that'll drop out after the New Hampshire primary. But if Bernie Sanders is doing well on social media, chances are he'll be in it for the long haul.
Well, that's an interesting concept. See, social media is a great place for these candidates to really build grassroots campaigns. And it was that kind of campaign that really helped Obama get into office when he ran for the first time. It helped him surpass Hillary, who everyone thought back then, like they do now, that she'll be the automatic candidate for the Democratic Party. And it didn't happen then.
Yeah.
And someone could definitely undermine her again, because I have to tell you, she so far has been graded an F.
Ooh.
In my report. She's not doing a great job. She's got a very slick campaign. But it feels very much like, and I'm talking about social media when I say campaign, it's very much like advertising.
Oh, so it doesn't have an authentic feel to it.
No, it's not personal at all. She doesn't really speak to the people. It's all in third person. Someone else is speaking on her behalf, referring to her in third person. Mm-hmm. It's not warm and fuzzy at all.
So what you're saying is that Hillary, should, if she's going to get her act together in social media, has to actually get in there, or somebody has to act like it is her, or type her words out there and get some retweetable quotes out there for people to shoot out there and make them viral.
Exactly. There is an unprecedented opportunity for these candidates to really create engagement and community with real voters. And you had started out mentioning that you thought only young people were on social media. Well, young people are on social media. It's not just us baby boomers and older. So we all know that it's the older people who are the ones who vote. Only 50% of our population bothers to go out and vote. And wouldn't it be wonderful if these young people could learn the value of getting involved in politics and having a voice, and if they were drawn into all this because it's happening just right on social media?
Yeah, I it's a shame, but I really do believe that unless there's an app for the ballot, you're not going to get the young people to vote in large numbers because they're going to have to get up off the couch and drive down the street to a firehouse somewhere and stand in line and then press a pencil or a pin or something like that into little dots. And that's way too much work.
Oh, you make it sound so difficult. I don't know if I'll even bother to go out next time.
Well, that's not difficult for us. I mean, that's old hat for us. I mean, that's almost fun. My wife loves voting because it's always at the firehouse. Ooh, firemen.
Now, I can't blame her there. See, mine's in the middle school. It's not so exciting.
Yeah. Now, it seems to me, Kaylin Amadio, we're speaking with, her book coming soon is called The Boomer's Ultimate Guide to Social Media Marketing. It seems to me, because of the viral nature of social media, that some upstart third-party guy or gal could build a cult of personality and present a problem for the two-party system.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And, you know, over 80% of all adults in the United States use Facebook.
80%?
That's over 80%. I don't know the exact number. Wow. It's like 82, 83, somewhere in there.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It's like practically everybody.
That's practically everybody, including my mother.
And you know what? It almost seems like, because it's over 80%, that less than 20% is probably a bunch of people we'd rather not have vote anyway.
And they're probably people who aren't old enough to vote as well.
Oh, that could be true.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's okay too. But you're right. Someone who really had their act together could do exactly that. They could create a grassroots campaign and potentially come out on top, or really skew the results for front runners.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to date myself here, and of course, who hasn't done that? But remember when Pat Paulson used to run for president all the time in the 60s and in the early 70s? Now, if he were alive today and he ran for president and he had a full social media complement, a guy like that could probably get some votes.
You know, That's interesting. I haven't thought about him in a long time.
You remember Pat Paulson for president.
I
think I might even have a pin locked away in a box somewhere.
Right? From Laffin.
That guy, exactly.
Yeah. So imagine what Jon Stewart has done to the news.
Right.
Okay? And how many young people listen to Jon Stewart and take for fact a lot of the things they hear from him as if it's real news.
Mm-hmm.
The same sort of thing. A Pat Paulson could have done the same sort of thing using social media to become a viable and believable candidate.
Blurring the lines between a comedy routine and reality. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly what could have happened.
Yeah, how about that? All right, so let's see. And by the same token, one of the biggest deals with social media is that if you have a following, you can enlist them as your stormtroopers and they could take over the planet for you. And so if one of these candidates can really motivate their following, then they're going to save a lot of money on their campaigning, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And I'll tell you, Hillary has been trying to do that from day one. She is very actively and very heavily getting volunteers to be part of her movement. And that's another thing that social media is great for. It's great for explaining to people what matters to you and getting them to buy in to your movement so that they can help propel it forward for you.
When's the book coming out?
October.
The Boomer's Ultimate Guide to Social Media Marketing. Remind us when it comes out so we can put it in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Kaylin Amadio, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Like her. Retweet her.
Okay.
Done and done.
Yeah. How about that, huh?
What a novel concept, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? After 20 years, you know what's happened after 20 years? IHOP just realized that their logo looks like a frown. And so they're going to do something about it. They've come up with a new logo.
Are they rebranding?
They're rebranding. So think about their logo. It says
I can't even picture it.
It says IHOP in blue, and then there's the frown, like the red thing that says International House of Pancakes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like there's eyeballs, per se. It's just the frowny part with the International.
Yeah.
I looked at it.
Yeah, so it's the O and the P in IHOP look like eyes and a nose, more or less.
Oh, I missed that part.
It's hard for me to imagine a frown when I think of IHOP because they offer unlimited pancakes, and who can frown when you have unlimited hotcakes in front
of you? Oh, yeah, and then if you want, they'll put the strawberries and the whipped cream on there. They'll even make a happy face on your pancake.
I'm a Waffle House girl.
Shebang.
You're a Waffle House girl?
Oh, heck yeah.
They have waffles at IHOP.
No.
Diversity. That's what that company believes in.
Waffle House is that's my jam, that Waffle House.
Yeah.
Get it?
Yeah.
All right.
Jam?
How about
you're talking about jelly, aren't you?
How about how about a fried chicken and waffle sandwich? Is that okay?
I've never had that before.
Sounds good. Yeah, I've never had it
before. It is delicious.
I'll bet.
All right, cut it out because that's it for hour one of the program. More to come, including it's a wonderful time to visit France, except there's all those French people there. Do you need motivation? Then we have a speech for you. And is the best way to save water to install a swimming pool? Those stories and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, The 70th anniversary of D-Day is coming in a couple of days, and our travel guy will walk you through a trip to Normandy. Plus, what's the deal with Tom Hanks' rapper son? And what's the first thing you should do when you come home to find a stranger in your bed? The friends are here. Chris Martin and our producer, Brooke Peterson. Aaron Myers has the day off. She'll be back on our next program. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. Back in the third grade, Brooke, I did a report, and I had a picture that I cut out of a magazine because, you know, we didn't have the internet back then. You couldn't just right-click and save and print and all that kind of stuff. I had to just actually deface a National Geographic is, I think, what I did because they had a story about a walking fish, and that was my report. I got an A-.
Minus?
Well, that was good for me. You know, I was just a cut-up. I was the class clown. So to get an A- on a report on the walking fish was a big deal for me.
So it has a soft space in your heart then?
Yes.
Walking fish.
It was. I did a report in the first grade on the Triceratops and in the third grade on the walking fish. I kind of cruised through second grade. Don't recall what I did. But anyway, I've always been fascinated with those, and they don't seem to have been in the news all that much for the last, 50 years.
Well, I have never heard of this climbing perch, walking fish thing. But apparently it is migrating from Papua New Guinea?
Yes.
Over to Australia, and the Australian scientists are pretty upset about it.
So they swim first, and then they what? They climb up on shore and start walking to people's houses?
Well, they actually look like fish. So these fish, they're not like amphibian-type looking fish. They look like, you know, a little catfish or something, and they can come up on land. They can live without water for 6 days.
So they can breathe pretty normally.
Yeah, somehow or another, they are able to scoot along on their little fins pretty well, as far as I'm concerned. And,
yeah, I disagree with that. I saw this fish struggle to walk. I don't even think you should call it a walking fish. Maybe you could call it a wriggling fish,
exactly.
A fish doing everything it can to keep from teetering over.
Yeah, but you know what? Traversing along land as opposed to swimming effortlessly in the water, I mean, you got to give the fish some credit and say, okay, fine, go ahead. We'll call you a walking fish.
I mean, most fish that are out of the water are on their sides and they're just like flopping around. This guy got up vertical with his little fins on either side. He sort of wriggles forward. He's moving, man. He's moving.
Oh, I agree. He's giving it everything he has.
Do we have this video on the show fun page?
We should. I think so.
In that 6 days of air he has, he probably makes it, I'm going to say, 100 yards, though, I would say.
Hey, you know, baby steps. Yeah. But he's moving. And the scientists, apparently this fish is really aggressive and is a threat to the local ecosystem in Australia. And so they're like, you know, asking fishermen to report sightings of these guys and trying to sort of curtail
their
aggressive
migration. Like you walk up on one and he says, I'm walking here. That kind of aggressive?
Perhaps. He might take a little chunk out of your toe or something. I don't know. It doesn't really go into how they're aggressive, but I think they are. They are a threat to local birds and marine life.
Oh.
That's what this article
says.
Look
at that.
But it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, he's walking. It's only 16 seconds of video, but you get the idea.
And it's not like an ugly little fish. He's a cute little fish. It's just sort of...
Are there such things as cute little fish?
Yeah. Have
sure.
you never seen Finding
Aren't
Nemo?
All fish ugly? Yeah, yeah, you're right. Good point. The clownfish.
They're all...
You nailed it.
Chris,
yes.
You need to
shut
me
down.
Let me get you to work on something right now. It starts this way. So a fish walks into a bar.
Right.
Get right to work on that, will you?
Yeah. And the bartender says, so why the wet face?
That was quick.
Thank you.
Very good. Very good. All right. You know what? These days, everything's gone digital, Brooke.
Mm.
Somehow, some way, we're going to be wearing our computers, if not on a wristwatch, on our earrings or on our T-shirts. I don't know. Have we gotten to that point yet?
We are. We are getting there soon. Google is partnering with Levi's to create a new clothing textile that basically makes the fabric a... It's called a conductive yarn. This fabric is a conductive yarn. It's weaved with some alloy and something or other, and it is able to connect to a little computer on your... You're also wearing like the size of a button, and which then wirelessly transmits data to whatever device you have around that to do stuff. So you can like swipe your shoulder to turn off the lights. You can pat your thigh to, I don't know, lock your doors or whatever.
Wow.
It's crazy.
It's
also for like fabric and upholstery too. It's not just clothing, so you can use, you know, for all kinds of different
things.
Seems
like I saw this on TED Talk like 3 or 4 years ago, but it's, you know, we're talking about stuff that maybe they were just imagining, but now it's coming to fruition.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not necessarily super interested in the watches and that kind of wearable stuff. But this is kind of it. But you had an interesting point earlier about what that could do to your, like, a body's sort
of... Oh, we were talking about this before the show. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm thinking that people get all sorts of stimuli on their body for whatever reason, and then they add certain things, or they don't exercise, or they're sedentary, or they drink alcohol or smoke or something like that, and all of a sudden they get the restless leg syndrome, you know, that sort of thing. And it's, often it's tied to some kind of neuropathy, you know, a nervous thing, and their skin just gets weird. And so you've got now computing mechanisms all over your body on your clothing, and kind of damage could that be doing to your nervous system?
Electromagnetic radiation just from, like, the devices around us and in our homes, what might it do to us if we're wearing it literally all over our bodies? Skin-to-skin contact or skin-to-fabric contact.
I don't know.
Probably nothing. I say go with it. You know, there was a commercial
listening to the Don't Overthink doctor from the first hour.
Oh, that guy's my favorite.
Yeah, all right.
That's like my Bible, Don't Overthink.
Now, what was the Under Armour comment?
So there was a commercial for Under Armour, and I don't think that they had actually invented the project. For whatever reason, the commercial was just trying to show some concept for the future.
Yeah.
But the person could change the color of their outfit that they were wearing. They were wearing like a one-piece workout outfit. They could change the color by manipulating a touchscreen on their wrist, right? And so to me, this sounds like a good idea from that standpoint. Like, you could have one piece of clothing, maybe relatively easy to wash, hopefully, or you don't have to wash it every day, and you could change the color of it, change the texture, change the way that it looks, change the tone of it, of that.
That's
right?
Trippy.
That would be a good idea. Seems like it would be interesting anyway.
Yeah.
Of course, then when it gives you skin cancer, we've got a lawsuit up against Under Armour, but
yeah.
Well, it'd be cool for a little while.
I think some of that may be coming, so just keep an eye on this technology and be aware that, you know, what's next? Flying saucers, Chris?
Absolutely. Well, those have been around for years, Phil.
Have they?
Flying saucers?
No, it's just all – it's can it be explainable. Either it's a hoax or some kind of weather pattern or a weather balloon or something like that, right?
Yeah, well, not anymore. NASA is not going to make any excuses for the flying saucer that everyone is going to see tomorrow. That's – tomorrow would be Wednesday, the 3rd of June, right? Okay, so –
2015.
And tomorrow, if you're around Kauai, Hawaii, look into the sky and you will see a – balloon 3 football fields wide carrying a 15-foot-wide circular object that weighs 7,000 pounds up into the high altitudes of space. From there, the balloon will blow up, and the booster rockets at the bottom of this flying saucer that NASA is commissioning will shoot it another 60,000 miles, or 60,000 feet, excuse me, up into space, and then they're just going to drop it back down into the ocean.
What's
so it doesn't have any propellant on it when it's saucering around then. It's just going to come back down like a Frisbee.
All right. So it's going to go like this. The balloon's going to take it to 120,000 feet with no propellant.
Yeah.
The balloon explodes. The propellant takes it another 60,000 feet. It will actually use rocket propulsion
to propel it
further up.
But then it's going to come down to test what it can do when it's coming through the atmosphere and whether it'll burn up on re-entry.
Exactly right. Yeah, and this parachute. They have this 100-foot-wide parachute that they're going to be using to drop stuff onto Mars when we go there here soon, right?
You know what this is? 2025. This is, Chris.
So they're practicing. And then when a recovery mission, all that stuff.
You know what this is? I mean, it just sounds kind of, you know, okay, that's not the flying saucer we had in our mind. The one we think of can go, you know, like that. And it could fly and stop and zigzag and all that sort of thing. This is from NASA. This is just one big head fake.
Yeah, it's a diversion tactic.
Yeah, exactly, right? Because they're saying, oh, we are dozens of years away from an actual NASA flying saucer because, look, this one can't even fly. All it can do is fall.
Well, how's that? But don't they want some kind of excuse so if you do see a flying saucer, they can say, no, that's easily explainable. We did that, remember?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
I'm going the opposite way.
The diversion and the decoy.
We already did that. If you see a flying saucer, it's obviously NASA's.
I was clearly overthinking.
Listen to the doctor, will you?
Yeah, I will. All right, up next on the program, with last show, I think it was the last show, we were talking about breastfeeding in public. Someone has taken this, in fact, a picture, and posted it, and it's gone viral, and it's a new concept called breastfeeding shaming. And we'll explore that a little bit with Brooke and whether that's any more wrong or right about breastfeeding in public. Next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.
Thanks for tuning in. Follow us. We're all on Twitter. Some of us are easier to find than others. At Phil Hewlett. At... is it at Brooke Peterson?
On Twitter?
Yeah.
It's at Faf Guests.
Oh, yeah, that's your only...
Well, I have my other personal show.
But you don't want to put it out.
I don't
have
my own personal.
You don't want stalkers, huh?
No, I'm done with stalkers.
At Faf.
Overrated.
So do you use Twitter really just for your friends and family, like a close knit group of people?
No, I don't have a personal Twitter.
Oh, you don't?
As Brooke Peterson, okay. I have a Twitter with this show, and I have a Twitter for my own show.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah. Because I do know some people that do that. They just keep their Twitter account within a close-knit group, and they don't really put it out there to the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, an interesting way of using it.
I'd love to use it that way, but I'm too far gone.
Yeah. Well, you look at you. You're 30,000 followers. I mean, that's celebrity status, Phil.
It's celebrity status. Small time. It's not Kim Kardashian numbers.
No, it's like Central California numbers, you know?
Okay, fine.
It's like Palminteri numbers.
Yeah, Palminteri?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had him on the program in a while, the King of Santa Barbara. We're waiting for something to break out there in Central area of California. And, of course, yours is Chris Martin Show.
That's right.
At
it is.
Chris Martin
I asked you about that handle before I ever used it.
And we totally overthought that.
Didn't we?
We did. All right. That's a recurring theme. And here's another recurring theme, breastfeeding in public. It last week there was the supermodel who just gave birth to a baby, and she is breastfeeding her baby on the cover of a fashion magazine. We have a picture of that in case you'd like to see it for perspective.
Was that the Olivia Wilde? Or was that something else?
No, it was an Australian model.
Oh.
Yeah, no. Serious supermodel.
Okay.
And there she is, Nicole Trufillo or something like that is her name. And she's on the cover with her son Zion. And she's got a supermodel breast there in plain view and a naked baby bottom. On the cover, and it sparked outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question of breastfeeding in public really comes down to discretion, because there are clearly two camps. There are those who say, okay, it's fine, and those who say it's not fine. And somewhere in the middle are people that don't belong to either camp, and they're just saying, you know what, there's a happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, nothing wrong with breastfeeding. It's a beautiful way to feed your baby. It's a natural way to feed your baby, and it is going to offend a percentage of people if you do this in public. So why not just use some discretion, you know, bring a blanket or cover up, whatever. Still feed your baby. You don't have to flaunt it necessarily,
right,
just to prove that you have the right to do that in public. I think that's the part that's the militant side of the pro-breastfeeding in public point of view. And then the militant side on the other side is it's pornography. You don't do that in public. Mm-hmm. There's children around. They're going to see your naked breast.
Yes. The boob.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, okay, fine, let's wear those black and white Quaker outfits when we're walking around in public if we're that scared about, you know, a naked breast in public.
That's
so anyway,
the
there's the two polar opposites of the thing, and then there's a bunch of people right in the middle, and I want to plant my flag there. But now there's a guy who's being militant about it in a different way, and he's created a different discussion on this topic that I don't think we'd thought of, but thanks to Facebook, it makes it possible. Brooke, explain what's happened.
Well, once again, social media is just making everything. There's no boundaries. Nobody has their privacy completely safe anymore. And that comes into play here in this story. This woman was at a TGI Fridays last Thursday in Indiana. And she's breastfeeding her baby. And a neighboring table, it has this gentleman, and I think it says a young daughter, don't know how young, know what we're looking at here.
Mm-hmm.
But he takes offense at this woman next to them breastfeeding her child. So he takes a picture of her and posts it to Facebook and Instagram without her knowledge, of course, without
her permission,
and starts posting it, and then has a little blurb basically asking people, you know, what they think. At least that's the guise of his Facebook post. It just says, okay, mom's out there. I know when a baby is hungry, they need to be fed. I want to know if this is appropriate or inappropriate, and I'm trying to eat my Fridays. There are little kids around. I understand feeding in public, but could you at least cover your boob up? Your input is needed. So he's sort of presenting this as a debate. Like, what do you think? Am I right? Am I wrong? But
he didn't get permission. So it ends up being like how those people do the fat shaming thing, you know, where they take pictures of fat kids and they post them online. And that's just not nice. It's bullying, isn't it?
It is. And the woman somehow sees this. She sees that she's been posted and has this this shame thrown in her direction. And she retorts. She comes back at him and lays into him like apparently it's a 1,700-word Facebook message defending her right as a mother and, you know, basically a grow-up kind of message.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? Here's the thing. I do not have any children. I am not a mother, so I can't say from personal experience. But as a woman, I should support the women. Da, da, da. But I kind of see both sides. I mean, I can't imagine having a child, being out in public, needing to breastfeed my child, and this having my boob out there for the entire world.
Well, see, I'm fine with that. There's nothing wrong with that point of view, and I get the point of view where you want to breastfeed your baby in public, but then there's a reasonable way to do it. And if you're taking your baby out and you don't have a blanket with you, you're not a prepared mom. Sorry. But
this child does not like to be covered up. That's sort of why she's saying that she wasn't covered up to begin with, is that the baby doesn't like it. So there's that. I don't know what that...
Oh,
you know,
please.
What, you know,
it's not a...
A napkin. Even just a light little napkin just to, you know, I don't know.
Here's a little mommy 101. Mommy, it's not about what the baby likes or doesn't like. You train your kid to like whatever you want them to like, and they will...
But if the baby doesn't like it, he might be a biter, you know? Keep that baby happy if that's the case.
Yeah. You know what? Stuff changes over time. You just you have to train your kids to act a certain way. And you're the mom. You're in charge.
Oh,
do it your way.
He's like 2 months old.
Yeah, right. What does he know? He doesn't know. And what do you think? The baby doesn't like it. Please. Baby doesn't know what he likes either.
I just feel like with this kind of thing, if privacy is such an issue, then why doesn't she care about her privacy when she's breastfeeding?
Exactly. There you go. There's the contradiction.
Disconnect for me.
But the point is, cover up.
If you're breastfeeding your kid in public, you're looking for attention.
Yeah.
There's just no other way to put it. There's no other way that you
if you're not doing it discreetly, you're looking for attention.
Exactly right. And by discreetly, that means you would find a place way well off the beaten path. You're trying to stop your child from crying and having a serious episode in public.
Mm-hmm.
Understandable.
Yeah.
If you're at TGI Fridays in a booth, uncovered with your baby,
and you lop out the flapjack right there on the table,
you're looking for attention. She got exactly what she was looking for, which was to be posted on social media so she could respond with her 1,700-word tirade.
Yeah.
And I haven't read it, but go to your car. Just go to your car and do it. How hard is that?
Okay, hang on.
Turn on the
but
air
at
conditioner.
At the same time, for whatever reason, this stuff always seems to come up when people are in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And on one hand, I can see how you don't want to go to your car because it could probably take 15, 20, 25 minutes. I don't know. And you're missing time with the people you're there with.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to sort of extricate yourself from the entire meal just, you know, because you have to do what you have to do.
I don't know. Is TGI Fridays a family restaurant where you bring babies anyway? I think the bigger concern is that kids, from time to time, they get that projectile vomit, and it might land in my happy hour snacks, you know? those little
beer.
That would be a travesty.
By the way, I think you're extricating yourself from the conversation with the people at the table when you start breastfeeding.
See, I agree.
At the table, you're probably not having a meaningful conversation at that very point. How do you focus on conversation when someone's breastfeeding?
By the way, for reference, somebody who has breastfed quite a bit, three different children. My wife says that, oh, by the way, 2-month-old doesn't have teeth, so biting is not an issue.
Ah, good point. Big gumming?
Yeah.
Does gumming hurt?
Yes. Well,
how many times did your wife breastfeed in public? Is that a personal question?
Plenty, but it was always done discreetly. There was never an opportunity for somebody anywhere nearby to see any kind of boob skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she was a prepared mom. And like I said, you don't take your kid out without a blanket, you mm-hmm. know, a two-month-old. You know, cover up your baby when it's outdoors. You see that all the time. You know, that's one of our pet peeves as parents. We see parents with parkas and long pants and hats on, and they're carrying their baby in like a onesie
mm-hmm.
with their head, you know, uncovered. What are they thinking? Well, I guess they're getting their kid ready, you know, building up some resistance to the elements.
Right. Toughen them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand the necessity, for sure the necessity is there, because when a kid needs to eat it, the child needs to eat immediately.
It's a tricky scenario.
It's nice to know you guys have an opinion about it.
Well, you're talking about
it's
boobs,
complicated.
Phil. I'm always going to have an opinion about that.
That's the point of this woman.
Yeah.
The boobs are sexualized by us.
Yes.
By me.
Right. Well, it's hard to avoid that. According to a new study, by the way, the noise from your commute is making you fat. You're 25% more likely to be overweight if you regularly drive in light traffic above 45 decibels. It's because the noise stresses you out and makes you produce cortisol, which makes you gain weight. And if you drive in heavy traffic, it makes your waistline half an inch bigger. How about that?
That sounds like a totally BS study, Phil.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Gary Warner, our travel guide, joins us next. Because there's a pretty significant World War II anniversary coming up, and it's a good reason to catch a last-minute flight and book a hotel in France. We'll have to hear what he has to say next on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Bonjour. Comment allez-vous? Hey, Saturday, in real time here, is the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings in France, and that gives us a great springboard to talk about traveling to France. So let's bring in our travel guy, Gary Warner. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent. Now, if I recall accurately, you've been to France a bunch.
Yeah, dozens and dozens of times.
And one of your favorite places to go, isn't that right?
Well, it's interesting that we talk about D-Day because that's how I started going over there. I was the military reporter for my newspaper prior to becoming the travel editor. So there was a gentleman by the name of Walter Ehlers who received the Medal of Honor during the landing at D-Day. So I would often go over with him. On the various anniversaries, he would go almost every year for a while. That's a great region over there. I have probably three favorite regions in France, other than of course the city of Paris. That's Albi down in the south, which is sort of the more traditional sort of French countryside. A lot of the heavier meats and sort of the Lyon type. Cooking with the rivers and the very slow life that you get in France when you think of like, you know, Provence or something like that, except it doesn't have the crowds of Provence or the prices of Provence. It's just north of Provence. And then I like the area over in the far east around Strasbourg. You can go through the Champagne region and then over into Strasbourg. And that's that part of the country that's kind of changed hands a few times between Germany and France. And so there's sort of a mixing of cultures there that's really neat.
A melange. To use
French
word, yes.
And then as a Southern Californian, I love going down to Biarritz, which is it's been a beach resort since the mid-19th century. You know, that going to the beach really wasn't something that people started doing until taking the waters until about the mid-19th century, a little bit earlier. And this was one of the first places where the French aristocracy would go down to the beach. Actually, they would go to Normandy first, but it was too cold there. And then they went down to Biarritz, and finally they got the trains down to the south of France, and you could go to Saint-Tropez, and you have Brigitte Bardot, and, you know, topless out on the beach, yeah. And all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, that'll look good on a postcard. A lot of people don't realize this, at least it seems like people that are perhaps younger than 50 years of age. But the beach at Normandy is actually American sovereign soil, is it not?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. The not the beach, but the graveyard that's above it is American sovereign soil. The beach is still part of France. But so one of the things that's sort of interesting is that most of the graveyards don't close, but the American graveyard closes. There's a closing time. So there's a German graveyard just down the main street there, and so you can go to the German graveyard after hours, but the Americans you know, the one that they have in Saving Private Ryan is shut down.
Right. And the
sort of odd.
And right. But, you know, what we try to remember now, 70 years after the D-Day landings, is that American blood spilled all over that beach. And it is the reason why France still is, that Normandy is still in France.
Well, yes, and you know, there's a great history with these two countries. That basically, there's a lot of historians that say that we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for France helping us out, especially with sea power during the Revolutionary War, mm-hmm. and when Cornwallis was backed up against the sea at Yorktown. The reason he couldn't get away was because the French Navy was sitting out there. And later, when World War I occurred, and we joined the fight late. General Pershing's staff landed in France, and one of his officers, not Pershing himself, said the famous Lafayette, "We are here," meaning that we have returned the favor, we have come back. And then finally, yes, with Normandy, the invasion of Normandy, once again, Americans coming to, along with the British and the Canadians, coming to France to liberate Europe and get France back to the French.
Yeah. Now, these days, as wonderful as France is, Gary,
yes,
the people there, especially the Parisians, can ruin your trip. Or is that a myth?
Well, for me personally, I don't think myth is quite the right word, because it can happen. These are very proud people. The Gallic sense, they're different than the Southern Mediterraneans and the Italian. You know, the Italians are kind of like things roll down their back. They'll get their hackles up if you act, if you come up to someone and just start launching right into English, they're going to take that as a sign to be rude to you.
Yeah, like if now, I say, 12 euros for a ham sandwich? Come on.
Right, right. And, you know, so even if you don't speak any French, the thing you need to know is parlez-vous anglais, which means do you speak English? And, of course, they don't expect you to speak French. And if you actually are a good French speaker, they actually don't like that. They want to show that their English is better than your French.
Really?
So there's a little dance that goes on there. I have found that when I was younger, that I didn't get as much of the sort of the blowback about being an American. As you get a little bit older and you go to a little bit nicer hotels and things like that, you'll get a little bit more attitude, I think. But yeah, when I was backpacking or when I was staying at B&Bs and things like that, it was great.
Sounds like that countryside in Albi might be the place to avoid all of that attitude.
No. Actually, I think Albi in that area is fine. You know, one of the problems is that you got to understand the Parisians to a degree. Most popular city to visit in the world. And over a million, an average of over a million visitors a day.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? You know, a million visitors a day. So they obviously live off that.
Sure.
But at the same time, there's the Americans who just barge in and start spouting in English, you know, happens, you know, many, many, many times a day.
Yes.
And even though people want your money and things like that, and they want your business, it can get a little bit irritating.
Yeah.
Now, you also have to understand the French have had these series of sort of steps down in the world. They used to be one of the great powers. Mm-hmm. Then after World War I, World War II, they no longer are. French is no longer the language of diplomacy,
right,
which it had been. That became English after World War II. And it became English not because of England. It became English because of the Americans.
Yeah.
So there's sort of this weird feeling of we have a great bond. I don't think we've ever fought each other in a war since we've been a country,
mm-hmm.
Unlike England. But there's a feeling among the French that there's a French pride there that's been a little bit wounded, I think.
Yeah, right. Okay. And we Americans can be uncouth.
Well, yeah.
You know, on
us? No. You mean wearing zip-up sweatshirts from Texas Tech to a restaurant on the left bank? No.
Exactly, right. Now, is there any concern, Gary, about increasing social and religious unrest in France?
There is. And, you know, France is very unique in that because of the French revolutions, multiple revolutions in the 19th century, they are actually probably the most anti-religious country in Europe. They really believe in this idea of a secular state in which you are a French citizen. You are French first, and then you are anything else second. So in the areas where there's been the Muslim extremism, some of the cities in the south around Marseille, in that area, very large populations of Muslims. The area right around the ring around Paris, again, a lot of people there. The French get their hackles up over this idea that people want to have that identity other than being French. So there's been a lot of battles over whether or not you can wear a scarf in over your head and things like that. And these echo battles that were earlier on when they were trying to keep a lot of the Catholic imagery out of the schools, because that was always identified with the more conservative parts of the country, the kings and the nobles and things like that.
Gotcha. All right, Gary. Thanks for the history lesson.
Yakety, 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 yakety. Yeah, but
nothing wrong with it at all. We love it because
there is tension there. Yeah. There is tension there, and probably more than just about any country, I think, out there, because it's an ongoing debate, and people are very angry about it there. Whereas in for example, in Germany, they, because of their history, they can't express themselves quite as radically.
But don't let us scare you away. Visit France. It's a wonderful place to go.
One of the greatest places in the world. I mean, you know, what is it? See Paris and die. I'd rather not die, but, you know, I'm glad I saw Paris.
There you go. Gary Warner, thanks as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
You know it, man.
All righty.
Bye.
There he goes. What's the bonsoir? What do you say when you say goodbye in French?
Bon voyage.
Au revoir. That's right. Au revoir.
Bonsoir.
Yeah. See? Hey, you took some French, didn't you?
See?
It was my first language. When I was a little baby, I spoke French when I was 2 years old. And then my grandmother on my dad's side said, what are you doing? He's in America. Teach him how to speak English.
No,
and
what
so
a shame.
It was then it was immersion into English. And by the time I got to school, I forgot all my French.
You were Frenchless.
I'd be so angry.
That's right. I was absolutely devoid of France and French.
Bummer. What a great place. French fries, the French kiss.
Gosh, yes. Isn't it
French
wonderful?
Boobs.
Yeah. All right. Hey, do you want to keep paying for Netflix if they're going to start showing advertising on there? Does that seem like a contradiction of your contract, your agreement, and all of that? And it seems like more and more companies are starting to do that. You're paying for the deal, and then they're going to put ads on there? Are you outraged? Let's find out how outraged you are next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. The swimming pool industry has come up with a solution for people trying to save water in a drought. You know what they say? Install a pool. But they might actually have a point. The average pool uses about 25,000 gallons of water a year. Watering a lawn uses about 30,000, so if you replace your grass with a pool, you actually might wind up conserving a little water.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah?
You have to get rid of your entire lawn and...
let's say you have a lawn in the backyard. You know, then you concrete it over and you put in a pool and put some potted plants out there with a little drip in there, and you're saving some water.
Protect that pool.
All right.
I'm sold.
Exactly. And can you boil that water in an emergency, the pool water? Can you boil that and drink it?
My pool is a saltwater pool.
Oh, it is?
You got to boil the salt out.
In your fancy suburban estate?
Yeah. A.K.A. Palm Garden West Apartments.
What apartment number?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. You can zero right in for people. That's probably not wise. All right. And this may not be a wise move for the folks that run Netflix. And we certainly know that they've screwed up in the past. What was that huge screw-up that Netflix did? They decided to... It was something. They... were increasing their price double, or they deleted some kind of service. I forgot what it was, but it was at the time a stupid move, and people were wondering, how in the world can the CEO of a company still be the CEO of a company with that kind of a ridiculously dumb move? Now, some people are saying they're making another dumb move. What is it, Chris?
Well, you were talking about it earlier, Phil. There are no commercials on Netflix. That's probably the best part about any paid subscription service, is that usually you're paying to get away from being bombarded by commercials. But recently, random subscribers have been claiming that they are seeing advertisements before, during, and after a lot of their favorite Netflix shows.
Uh-oh.
Now, these are all original programming mm-hmm. advertisements, so mm-hmm. similar to what HBO does, you know what I mean? Like, oh, if you like this, you should also check out this, or guess what other comedy documentary we have coming up, or whatever it may be. Netflix says it's just a test, and it may never come to all members. It was just a randomized test to mm-hmm. see how it was going to work and what kind of reaction they'd get. But if Netflix is making mistakes, they are making mistakes in the right direction. You know, Netflix has 60 million subscribers now.
Wow. Huh.
I feel like it was just a couple of years ago we were saying like 10 or 12
That's
million.
That's 20% of the population.
That is unbelievable. 60 million members.
Yeah.
And I guess that some of that could be the people on other streaming devices.
Well,
like
you know
Roku
what it is.
It
may actually be more than 20% of the population, because if they have 60 million subscribers, are they talking about separate accounts? Because each account might be a household of 2, 3, 4, or 5 people, right?
That's true.
Or yeah, maybe that's what it is, too. Maybe they're taking the eyeballs on Netflix every time it's on. So a household of 5, they're counting as 5, even though it's one Netflix account.
I can tell you that
they could still be watching different things at the same time.
I think people get miffed if they're paying a subscription fee and then they have to start seeing advertising. I know that the two times that I've agreed to the trial for Hulu Plus, and I've tried the trial, and you get 5 minutes of programming and 3 minutes of commercials, and it keeps going that way over and over and over again. And I'm thinking, well, if that's what Hulu Plus is like, I'm not going to pay for that.
Well, and that's
I haven't tried any of these streaming services. I actually canceled my Netflix when they went to the whole streaming thing, because I can't do that.
Yeah. Oh, all right. That's why I see my daughters almost stream exclusively with Netflix. But I still get the DVDs because I still remember what those are. Mm-hmm. But the kids, however, they'll just look up the list and the smart TV picks it up right away, and then boom, there you go.
It's pretty great. I've got to get me one of those smart TVs.
Yeah, everything's smart these days.
Smart. I got to get smart.
Yeah. How smart are they over at Apple, huh?
Apple's pretty smart.
They're just going to take over the planet at some point.
Yeah, well, at least the music industry. They seem to have the corner of that market, and Apple's going to be out to change how you listen to music again. You know, there's a developers conference next week. They're expected to announce their new music streaming service, as well as a push into internet radio.
Yep.
They're going to be offering unlimited on-demand streaming for $10 a month.
Wow.
Any sort of
unlimited
music that you can
on-demand. So kind of like Pandora.
Or like Spotify.
Google Play.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of others that I've forgotten who they are, but they're all out there.
They are, and this is going to put them in direct competition with those guys. Of course, when they come in, they have hundreds of millions of iTunes users that they can quickly advertise and push towards their music streaming service and walk right into a market and become number one overnight if they wanted to.
How about that?
If they push for it.
And they probably will be.
iTunes still makes me mad.
Here's one that I can't figure out. A woman in Dubai came home last week, found a man had broken into her apartment and was asleep on her bed. And her first move was, what would you do? It'd probably just, you'd either run out and call
the
police, or you'd grab something heavy and or sharp and lay into the guy, right? Anyway, her first move was to take a selfie with him. Then she called the cops, who came and arrested him. Every moment is a selfie moment.
Have you seen the selfie? Is she smiling?
Yeah, she's happy to be there. It's great. Look at this. Check this guy out. He's sleeping in my bed.
Is
selfie
he, like,
time.
Snoozing?
Yeah, he is. He's getting a good wink. All right. There's an animal that the animal scientists have just discovered that they probably enjoy watching in their spare time. Tell us about this. It's a marsupial,
it's
right?
It's a newly discovered and very rare marsupial in Australia, again with Australia. It's a cute little guy, but the males of the species only live about a year. And it's strange because the last 2 weeks of its very young, short, quick life all it wants to do is mate crazily, wildly, like incessantly, obsessively. It can't stop.
It's got a sexual addiction.
It does. And something happens, whether it's just some sort of hormone triggers where he just cannot not mate. And so he won't sleep. He won't eat. His stress hormone levels apparently shoot through the roof. Very dangerous.
Well, then he's just going to die, isn't he?
He dies having sex.
Really?
He goes out with a bang.
Exactly.
He can't stop.
Okay, good.
That's a joke.
What's his motivation?
Worst ways to go. Ways to go, right?
Sure. Why not? Hey. That's one motivated marsupial. But if you need motivation, if you're going to graduate from high school or college or kindergarten or whatever it is that you need some motivation for, who do you call?
Shia LaBeouf.
Of course you don't call Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, you do. If you haven't seen the clip of actor Shia LaBeouf's inspirational commercial, you will. I have no idea why he's doing it, but there is a nearly half hour commercial of him trying to motivate you behind a green screen. Here's a piece of it.
Do it! Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday, you said tomorrow, so just do it! Make your dreams come true. Just do it.
Yeah, he's contorting himself. He doubles over, plucks invisible stuff out of the air, keeps enclosing the space around his crotch. I'm not sure exactly what he's up to, but the computer graphic guy's got a hold of it. There's a green screen behind him. Now there's Shia LaBeouf giving TED Talks with his motivational speech.
It sounds like he's going to hurt somebody.
School. Right, yeah. He's very fired up.
Wouldn't you be scared if you were in elementary school if he started screaming at you like that?
I think that was the comedy that the graphic computer designers were going behind when they dubbed that in behind the green screen.
Yeah. Mommy!
Kids all freaked out. There's Shia LaBeouf.
Don't be afraid. It's only Shia LaBeouf. He's been wacky from time to time.
I think he's doing this on purpose. I think that a lot of the wacky stuff he's done has been calculated.
Is he admitting now that he's an actor? Because there was a period of time when he denied being an actor.
I don't know. I don't speak to him personally. I would if he would answer my phone calls, but he won't.
He won't do that?
No.
What a loopy character.
Yeah, I don't even think he has a phone. He just keeps to himself. I'm not sure who I'm dialing, but they won't answer.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Anything else? Let me see if I got one more thing to leave you with. You know what Walt Disney's final words were on his deathbed? Oh, he couldn't speak, but he wrote it down on a piece of paper. You know what his final words were?
What?
Rosebud.
No. Walt Disney, not Orson Welles. His final words were Kurt Russell. He wrote it on a paper. Apparently, he was thinking of movie ideas since Kurt Russell, at that point, had signed a 10-year contract with Disney.
Kurt Russell.
That guy. Yeah. Hey, we love your comments. Contact at Phil Hewlett and Friends. There's a link there. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, too. Leave a comment. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, who's here today. So for her and for Chris, I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.